Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And welcome to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben, the second day of the 10th week of Operation of the Tyranny Response Network. So glad you've joined us and are helping us get out the word to other people to listen to the Tyranny Response Network. You can pick up the Tyranny Response Network anywhere in the world and certainly anywhere in the United States simply by going to the website policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. Scroll down just a little ways and you'll find a link that says live in all caps, underlined. Go ahead and click on that, and then your media player or whatever else you use to play sound files will pop up, and you will be able to listen to the show. A little ways down from there, you'll find a couple other links, actually a few other links. One says today's broadcast, or the one yesterday's broadcast. For those of you in California, we know there's some out in California and elsewhere on the West Coast who are listening to the show. The only real way that you can listen to it, unless you're in the habit of getting up at 4 in the morning, is to click on that today's broadcast, because by 10 o'clock or so Eastern time, normally, that link is updated and posted with the show that just occurred that morning. You can also listen to the previous shows for the last couple of days in case you missed one or more of them. We're glad that people are listening to those things, and they're even writing emails in and talking about those points, and we appreciate that. In fact, I had a call from somebody in California who had just taken the test out there. That's on the front page of policyofliberty.net about what kind of or who's going to take the test, excuse me, about what kind of evangelical he is in terms of public policy, what his views are with respect to the state, with respect to the nature of the state and the Christian's responses to public policy. There is a quiz at the bottom, a link at the bottom which says take the quiz. If you go to policyofliberty.net, we'd encourage you to do so. It'll help you think better and help you find out exactly where you stand, at least at the current time, on the great issues of the day respecting public policy and the nature of the state. So we'd encourage you to all take advantage of those things that are at policyofliberty.net. Here in Greenville, we've got 47 degrees this morning. We're going to rise only up to 52 degrees today. It's raining, and it's probably going to become more rainy throughout the day. So obviously, when you're out today, have your light coat ready, because it's going to be a little bit wet and a little bit cool all day, kind of a dreary day in Greenville. We also have a quotation that was sent in this morning from our research staff. Love when they find me quotations. This one is entitled on the subject line, The Foundation, from John Adams. It says, "Let the pulpit resound with the doctrine and sentiments of religious liberty. Let us hear of the mighty, the dignity of man's nature and the noble rank he holds among the works of God. Let it be known that liberties are not the grants of princes and parliaments." What a great quotation. And if you may notice that on the quotation section of policyofliberty.net, we are constantly updating that page when we find other great quotations to throw up there. In fact, this one may make it as well. Yesterday I had one by Mr. Rivero we put up on the website. And if you go to the quotation section of policyofliberty.net under philosophy or political philosophy, you'll find a growing section of wonderful quotations you might reflect on and use in your own lives. So at any rate, this quotation from John Adams rings very true of things we've talked about many times here on the Tyranny Response Network, especially here on Christian Worldview Today with Dr. John Coben, and that is that the government was formed after we acknowledged that we had rights inalienably given to us from God, that is, rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Jefferson declared those things, which is not his private sentiment, but the sentiment of all others, many others at the time of the American Revolution or the American War for Independence. That was a war of revolution only if you had the perspective of maybe the broader perspective of the colony rebelling from its master, King George, in the home country of Britain. It was the American War for Independence if you were on the side of the Patriots. I suppose either term could be technically correct. I think it's actually the American War for Independence, of course, but you can understand how it could be called either thing. At any rate, the great nation of America began where people thought that they were endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that governments are instituted among men. Why? In order that those rights might be protected, that we might have collective action to protect us from predators. The whole reason of having a government, although the founders saw it was very dangerous to install a government, was to protect the rights that we already had antecedent to the government, and certainly antecedent to what would become later the state in the United States under Lincoln and so forth. We held these rights not because government granted them to us, as John Adams implies here. Instead, we have received these liberties before we had government and before the state ever came into existence in the United States. So we hold these things to be self-evident, Jefferson says, and wants to remind us once again this morning that our nation is different than other nations in the world. We are not ruled by a tyrant, or we're not supposed to be ruled by a tyrant, who simply doles out rights and privileges to his favorite fair-haired boys and suffer the various indignities that are associated with that sort of a system. Instead, we are those who have liberty inherently, inalienably from God because of our nature as human beings and created in the image of God. Now, he makes another point in this quotation, which I think is very interesting. I was just doing some reading for an upcoming Times Examiner column. I'm going to be writing my weekly column. It's going to also show up in Free Market News, I suppose, and elsewhere, about Christians and rebellion, based on that little quip I heard yesterday or the other day in church on Sunday about if you disobey the state, you're in sin. Rebellion to the state is rebellion against God. And I was doing some reading on Christians in the American Revolution, and it is astounding to me how many pastors turn their pulpits into a political shop that would just drive liberals today crazy. I mean, they hate right now the fact that you even talk about the morality of the scriptures. Well, at that time, they were plotting war from the pulpit. And it was not just the Presbyterians and the Congregationalists, but also the German Reformed, the Lutheran, the Dutch Reformed, the Baptists, many Methodists. They were conspiring together to throw out the bum, King George III. They were defiantly saying that this man was causing them to commit idolatry. Hadn't heard that before, and I appreciated some historians I'd read about the issue, that they looked at King George wanting to have full authority over every area of life, and serving him would be an act of idolatry, and therefore it was necessary to overthrow him. They also were looking at America as the new Israel, the woman thrown out into the wilderness, the new world, and they're trying to be preserved, and the church and the work of God being advanced through America, and therefore the king was an impediment, somebody dragging them down and trying to tyrannize them as Satan himself, and needed to be opposed. So preachers had this sentiment, and were frequently attacking the king and encouraging, inciting rebellion and sedition in the United States. Now, some people have a real problem with that. If they were to look back, and this is what I'm going to be writing about for a couple of columns, I think, talking about exactly what happened, what was the mindset then, and was it truly sinful? Or are American Christians today, who hold the divine right view, wrong? Were all of those believers truly in a backslidden case? I mean, there was thousands and thousands of them. The majority, from what we can tell, of believers at that time, of church-going people, were in favor of sedition and revolution and rebellion. And they did acts of rebellion. It was commonly held that it was okay to rebel. And when people started to rebel and were caught, the courts of the colonies even refused to try these men for the rebellion and the sedition against the king. It was that widespread. Well, were they all just nuts? I mean, was the church at a nadir, at a low point? Or was the church doing the right thing? Well, if you ask some Christians today, they would say, well, they were in sin. I mean, God uses the actions of sinful men and turns them around to something good, but yeah, they were all just living in sin. Well, I have a hard time accepting that, and I don't think that it's necessarily true whatsoever. You may have a question or comment about that. We'd like to invite you to call the show at 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955. I can also send your questions and comments by email. Remember, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We're going to take a quick break here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
A few minutes ago, I'd mentioned my columns, and I want to give a quick plug for the Times Examiner, our local fledgling, struggling, well, it's actually not too fledgling, it's been around for several years, but our great conservative libertarian voice for the upstate of South Carolina. If you're not on the Times Examiner mailing list, you need to get on it. You'll be able to receive every week great columns from great writers. You'll be able to read Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, Joe Sobrand, Charlie Reese, and many others, including the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, and other local famous folks like Ben Graydon. I would encourage you to get on the subscription list. It's only $20 a year in-state, $22 a year out-of-state. As at the end of this month, it will go up by $5 a year. So be sure you give a call to Bob Dill at 864-268-0576. It's 864-268-0576. Or you can simply go by and pick one up out of one of the machines around the city of Greenville. Specifically, we know there's one at 44 Pine Knoll Drive at Greenville, South Carolina, 29609, 44 Pine Knoll Drive, not too far off of Wade Hampton Boulevard and pretty close to the RBC building. That phone number, 864-268-0576. Make sure you talk to Bob or Laverle and pick up a copy of the Times Examiner or get on the subscription list by giving them a call. They'll be happy to take care of you. Well, we wanted to, usually whenever Chuck Baldwin writes something, who was the former vice presidential candidate for the the Constitution Party, Chuck Baldwin, whenever he writes something, we like to read at least a piece of it on the air. And this week, Chuck has an article he's put up called "The Alamo Heroes Seem Foolish," March 8th, 2005. He says, it is that time of year for me to remind my readers about the magnificent stand by the defenders of the Alamo back in 1836. The Alamo fell on March 6th of that year. For more than 13 days, 186 brave and determined patriots withstood Santa Anna's seasoned army of over 5,000 troops. To a man, the defenders of that mission fort knew that they would never leave those ramparts alive. They had several opportunities to leave and live, yet they chose to fight and die. How foolish they must look to this generation of spoiled Americans. It is difficult to recall that stout-hearted men such as Davy Crockett, a nationally known frontiersman and former congressman, Will Travis, only 23-year-old, with a little baby at home, and Jim Bowie, a wealthy landowner with land on both sides of the Rio Grande, really existed. These were real men with real dreams and real desires. Real blood flowed through their veins. They loved their families and enjoyed life as much as any of us. There was something different about them, however. They possessed a commitment to liberty that transcended personal safety and comfort. Liberty is an easy word to say, but it is a hard word to live up to. Freedom has little to do with financial gain or personal pleasure. Accompanying freedom is her constant and unattractive companion, responsibility. Neither is she an only child. Patriotism and morality are her sisters. They are inseparable. Destroy one and all will die. Early in the siege, Travis wrote these words to the peoples of Texas. Fellow citizens and compatriots, I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Ana. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion, otherwise the garrison are to be put to the sword. I have answered and demand with cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat. Victory or death, P.S., the Lord is on our side. As you read these words, remember that Travis and all the others did not have the ACLU, PETA, People for the un-American Way, and the National Education Association telling them how intolerant and narrow-minded their notions of honor and patriotism were. A hostile media did not constantly castigate them as a bunch of wild-eyed extremists. As school children, they were taught that their forefathers were nothing more than they were not taught that their forefathers were nothing more than racist jerks. And, you know, this, by the way, as we're thinking through this, and I'm going to go back and read and finish the rest of this because this is so good. Imagine that people in utter rebellion are saying the Lord is on our side. I mean, Texas really did not belong to the United States at that time, did it? Wasn't Santa Anta simply going back and doing the bidding of the king? Wasn't he actually doing the bidding of the Mexican government, so to speak? I call him the king as a surrogate. Weren't they actually trying to just take back what is rightfully theirs as Mexicans? Weren't they actually trying to do the right thing under God by serving him and protecting the rights of citizens of Texas who were actually part of Mexico at the time? Well, then what about these rebels? How in the world can they claim that God was on their side? How could the Americans at the time of the war between the states or the American Revolution, the American War for Independence, have made that claim? Just a thought, food for thought as we go ahead and read through this. Continuing with Chuck Baldwin, he says, the brave men at the Alamo labored under the belief that America and Texas really was the land of the free and the home of the brave. They believed God was on their side and that the freedom of future generations depended on their courage and resolve. They believed further their posterity would remember their sacrifices of love as act of love and devotion. It all looks pale now. By today's standards, the gallant men of the Alamo seem rather foolish. After all, they had no chance of winning. None. However, the call for pragmatism and practicality was never sounded. Instead, they answered the clarion call, victory or death. Please try to remember the heroes of the Alamo as you listen to our gutless political and religious leaders calling for compromise and tolerance. They try to recall the time in this country when ordinary men and women had the courage of their convictions and were willing to sacrifice their lives for freedom and independence. One thing is certain, those courageous champions did not die for a political party or for some lesser of two evils mantra. They fought and died for a principle. So did the men at Lexington and Concord. That is our heritage. On second thought, do they look foolish or do we? Very good commentary today, Chuck Baldwin. We always appreciate what you have to say. Excellent commentary this morning. And we're so happy that we have such great materials coming through to the Tyranny Response Network, especially the Christian Worldviews. I've got a great set of researchers who are constantly forwarding me good stuff to read and to comment about here on the air. We do want to talk about a little bit more about this business, about God being on the side of the rebels. And we're going to do that shortly when we're going to have a break, and then we'll probably come back and talk about that, although I've got a pile of stuff we need to go over today, so we'll try to fit it all in. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, And this is specifically Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. Be back in a sec.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
You know, I think what we're going to do is go through and read some more of these great research pieces that people have emailed me and see if we can't tie some of these things together into some congruent thinking this morning. Remember, the Christian Worldview program is specifically designed to help Christians think better, think more deeply about the great issues of the day, both about biblical theology as well as issues of public policy and political philosophy of freedom. Well, someone had sent me an older article, a short article by Murray N. Rothbard called Guilt Sanctified. This is about almost 15 years old now, and it's a short piece, I think, that has a lot of interesting aspects to it for us today still. Murray Rothbard was sort of a paradox because he was clearly an atheist and clearly a Jewish atheist, whatever that means. It's always surprising to me how a person can claim to be Jewish and also claim to be an atheist. He was one of the greatest economic historians that I'd ever read, just a tremendous writer, and obviously knew a lot about the Christian faith, even though he did not hold to the Christian faith. He was not an anti-Christian, I would say. In fact, he wanted everyone to be able to believe what they wanted to believe, although he unfortunately did not. He passed away and is, as we believe as Christians, in hell at this moment. But despite that fact, as we can say about many people who ended up losing it all and giving up their soul, he did have, while he was in this world, it right on many occasions with many things that he said. And in fact, was just an incredibly gifted economist and economic historian. He writes, earlier this century, left liberalism came to Americans preaching the alluring gospel of liberation from guilt. Americans, they boldly proclaimed, are repressed, inhibited, guilt-ridden for giving into their natural desires and impulses. We come to preach to you a joyous removal of guilt, hammered to you by repressed ministers and priests. We preach hedonism, the end of guilt, following your desires, and to put it in a common rebarbative phrase of the 1960s, sexual revolution, if it moves, fondle it. Sex, furthermore, is the only drink of water. It's only a drink of water, natural and harmless. The era of guiltlessness under our left liberal culture lasted, as I remember, about 6 months. Now the entire culture is characterized by a massive collective guilt, and if anyone fails to give due public lip service to a long list of solemnly avowed guilts, he is literally driven from public life. Guilt is everywhere, all pervasive, and brought to us by the same scoundrels who once promised us easy liberation. A brief rundown: guilt for centuries of slavery, guilt for the repression of rape of women, guilt for the Holocaust, guilt for the existence of the handicapped, guilt for eating and killing animals, guilt for being fat, guilt for not recycling your garbage, guilt for desecrating the earth. Note that this guilt is never confined to the specific individuals, say, who enslaved or murdered or raped people. There are, I dare say, few enslavers left in America today. Say a southern slaveholder aged 150. Effectiveness in inducing guilt comes precisely because the guilt is not specific but collective, extending throughout the world and apparently for all time. In the old days, we reviled the Nazis for their doctrine of collective guilt. Now we embrace the same Nazi concept as a vital feature of our ethical system. For confining guilt to specific criminals would not do, because it would not fit with that Joe Sobrin has brilliantly called our doctrine of accredited victimology. Some groups are accorded the status of official victims. Everyone not in the victim group are therefore criminals and official victimizers. The victimizers are expected to feel guilty about the victims, and therefore, because there is no point to guilt without payoff, to pay through the nose in money, privileges, and empowerment forever and ever without end. Amen. There is never a way of getting out from under, and this is what our liberators have brought us. In return for old-fashioned Christianity and guilt about sex, they have brought us in a new religion of victimology and the goodness and of the goddess nature. And even sex, the last bastion of hedonism, is no longer guilt-free. With the onslaught of the sex exploits women and ravening condom mania in the interest of safe sex, it might be better to scrap the whole thing and go back to Christian guilt. Certainly, it would be simpler and more peaceful. As in all other respects of our rotten culture, the only way to save the day is to raise up the banner high and encourage a frontal and all-out onslaught against the left guilt inducers. In such an onslaught lies the only hope of taking back our lives and our culture from these malignant pests and tyrants. Well, I couldn't agree more with Murray Rothbard on that last sentiment. In fact, the gist of his article is, do you realize what's happening? Think about what Stephen Yates told us the other day through his important article on political correctness. We have a Marxist plot at work, whether it be Fabian socialist or otherwise, trying to influence our thinking so that we believe that by doing certain acts or behaving in a certain way, we are doing something that is wrong and deserves restitution. Somebody deserves restitution for those actions. Whether it be the actions of people in the past or actions currently, we still are required to pay. And because these people can make us feel guilty, we believe we have to give up pieces of our paycheck, pieces of our liberty, in order to help these groups that are so affected. And the homosexuals and all sorts of other barbarous kind of people that we believe are living a lifestyle that is wrong are right in line trying to collect these social benefits. It is this kind of tyranny, folks, that leads us to go astray. It's this kind of tyranny that's going to pull America back down the drain and take away our great nation's status as one of the freest peoples in the world and one of the greatest nations in the history of the world. It is these kind of tyrannies that produce large income taxes, that produce the welfare state, and produce other social maladies by the hand of civil government or by the hand of the state. We need to beware, folks, and oppose these kinds of folks that come up with these doctrines, because they're completely wrong, and they're wrong-headed, and they're immoral, and they're against the ways of truth and liberty that we find here in America. Someone has sent me an article from Kevin Abrams. Is the domestic income tax a surveillance tax? Which is interesting. This came out of News with Views, March 8th, 2005. And Mayor Amschel Rothschild once said, "Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws." We will not be able to hold our politicians accountable until we get rid of the Fed, Howard Phillips, the chairman of the Conservative Caucus, said. And we do not enjoy liberty by grace of government, by limitations upon its power, said Francis Lieber. What the Rothschild reference implies is how, through a control of money, absolute control of the nation and its people are achieved, that those who control and oversee your pocket actually control most, if not all, of your life. None shall be able to buy or sell without tax, revenue, or number. It's the corporate state cartel poker game wherein every trade, deal, or business transaction is submitted to a house cut. And that's the way things work nowadays, folks. This the article is going to go on and talk about how the IRS is and the income tax system is used to be as a surveillance on your life to find out what you're doing and what you should be, and basically be able to dictate what you should be doing. But the great concern is here, folks, that as long as the civil government, the state, has the control of the money supply and the control over the economy as it currently does, we are all living under tyranny and absolute enslavement to these people and their follies. There is no way that we can possibly escape when they have that leash on us and that stranglehold over us. And that is the entire point, I think, of this article. We're right up against a break here. We'll continue this theme and others when we get back on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And welcome back to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. If you're in Greenville today, it's currently about 47, 48 degrees outside. You're going to rise up to a high of only 52 degrees today with showers and intermittent rain throughout the day, so sort of a dreary day in Greenville. Make sure you have a coat with you to bear under the rain and cool weather. We've been talking on during the first half of the show about America's great history of freedom and the ploys of the left to attack us, whether it be through guilt manipulators, as Murray Rothbard reminded us, or through people who want to rewrite history and make fools of patriots, as Chuck Baldwin reminded us when we're talking about the Alamo and the great sacrifice that those men made, or when we look at other aspects of the culture and history, like, and of the public policy scene, such as the Internal Revenue Service, the meaning of the income tax, as a means of surveillance. As a means of surveillance. And this is a great tragedy that that is facing America today. Well, we have a person associated with TRN named Nelson Waller, who's a regular writer for the Nationalist Times, as well as Christian Views or Christian News. And he sent in some stuff today that just to remind folks about some other little-known issues that he's been uncovering and talking about in his own articles over time. Too much to read entirely over the air, but we might take a stab at just a couple of them. They are important for us to know here at Christian Worldview, and they are indeed pieces of information that you're not going to get in the mainstream press. Is Maine Antichrist... I'm having trouble reading my email here. Is the Maine Antichrist public relations stuff agency in America today the Christian judge associated with a fundy health herb throb Roy Moore deals them a major setback by public ridicule and by hate lies? Apparently the people's brains and backbones are growing back. From a current issue of AL Council of Conservative Citizens newsletter, the Alabamian, 2 weeks before the November general election, the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center made a desperate attempt to defeat a conservative candidate for the Alabama Supreme Court. Their modus operandi was to publish a picture of candidate Tom Parker with this group's national board member Leonard Wilson and League of the South leader Mike Wharton and feed it to all the daily press of the state. Of course, they labeled the council and league as hate organizations. Parker did not run for cover, as do many politicians under similar circumstances. His response to the press was, "If Southern Poverty Law Center is attacking me, I must be doing the right things." He added, "They are the most liberal, politically correct law firm in the country, and they have fought virtually every attempt of our state to acknowledge God as the source of our rights." To make a long story short, the SPLC effort backfired. Parker won his seat on the Alabama Supreme Court at over 200,000 votes. Interesting enough, we also have on November 10th, a man arrested with the Alabama flag wins a suit against the state. The Daily Mountain Eagle via DixieOutfitters.com. A man arrested while waving a state flag in front of the Capitol ended up getting the charge dismissed and won a token legal victory against the state. The case of Joseph Wyatt Willis of Prattville was tied to the Christmas celebration at the Capitol 3 years ago, December 2001, in the wake of the terrorist attacks in Washington and New York. Then-Government Dan Siegelman had the official state Christmas tree in front of the Capitol decorated with tiny American flags. Willis, first lieutenant commander for the Alabama Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, complained to Seligman's office that state flags ought to be included. He followed up his complaint December 17, 2001 by standing near the state Christmas tree while holding up a large Alabama flag. Capitol Police told him to leave, but he refused, citing the long history of protests on the Capitol steps. Capitol officers arrested him for disorderly conduct, saying they were concerned he might harm the Christmas tree or a passerby. With what? The flag? Oh, that's just preposterous. Anyway, they let this fellow go, and he has his small token victory. Here we have a progressive seeking to de-Christianize the buckle of the Bible Belt and force it into a lefty, liberal, hippie Oregon mold, Nelson says. Crisis of silent tyranny facing local Christians. December 10th, in our last installment, I wrote, Nelson says, the other night here in Greenville, the neocon politicians, Chamber of Commerce ghouls, media maverns, and other matoids got together a meeting of 1,000 local progressives to plot the next few years. Nothing of real value in these parts, using Portland, Oregon as their model. They openly tout gay rights as a value of the brave new world and their dreams will live by. That may have seemed too bad to be true, but the site has just turned up for the Greenville Vision 2025. Don't miss the diversity article link somewhere near you. The same evil schemes are afoot. And he's absolutely right about this. I went to that 2025 meeting here in Greenville, South Carolina. It's just another example of socialist central planning that's coming down to the local level with the utopian visions of the left being installed in virtuous and glorious language to deceive the masses and the gullible people, the gullible citizens, into spending tax dollars, denying people their personal property rights, and causing them to lose their property in favor of the dream world envisioned by certain groups of leftists. It's a very dangerous thing when that happens, folks. In fact, property rights are also in the news today. We remember the Supreme Court is reviewing our right to private property. Someone sent in a note following up from something we knew earlier from Business Reform magazine. The Supreme Court is hearing a case that will affect property rights of all of us. The city of New London, Connecticut, wants to condemn some private property so that private developers can build an office facility. The city claims it has the right to take property under eminent domain for the sole purpose of increasing tax revenue. Justice O'Connor asked the city attorney if the city wanted to seize property under in order to turn a Motel 6 into a Ritz-Carlton, would that be okay? The city's response, yes, it would be. Believe it or not, there are 10,000 cases in America every year where private property is taken, either by being condemned or by threat of being condemned, and then turned over to private developers. But the principle of private property is founded on the principle that property belongs to somebody, not the government. When the powerful interests have power to use government to take property away for the greater good of all us all, what rights are protected? Well, this is a very important thing. Private property is one of the inalienable rights that our founders envisioned. And if it can be just casually taken away like this, we indeed have a serious problem. The Fifth Amendment was never designed for government to simply say, I want to increase my tax revenue, so I'm going to get a bigger, better building here, or I don't like this person anymore, so I'm going to let my friend over there come and build what he wants, or I don't like the way his house looks, so I want to tear it down and have someone else develop something there. But that's the way it's used. It really shows, folks, that we do not own our real property. The land is not ours. We have a feudal privilege of possession and use, but we truly do not have rights in any allodial or absolute sense to the land and real property here in America. We're coming up against a quick break on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Just a couple quick items before we move along here. Some of you may not be aware of it, but the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, will be taking a trip to the West Coast and the Left Coast, I guess you might call it, and will not be here doing the program from March 10th through the 17th. Instead, we'll have various guests coming onto the show. I believe Pastor Tony Romo We'll be doing a couple of shows, and there are a few others that the production staff at TRN is using to fill in for me while I'm gone. So today's show, obviously, here. Tomorrow's show will also be here, but then it will be gone until the following Friday. So don't be surprised if you don't hear my voice between 7:30 and 9 in the upcoming week from Thursday and till the following Thursday, since I will be on the left coast taking care of some business and whatnot. At any rate, I also wanted to remind you who are listening to the recorded broadcast. We're very glad that you're listening to the recorded broadcast. Of course, the call-in line, live call-in line, doesn't work outside of 7:39 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And we're glad that you listen to recorded broadcasts. They're put on the web specifically because so many people do want to listen at their leisure to the current show or the most current shows. And there are three of them archived on www.policyofliberty.net. My production staff wanted me to let you all know that there is a summary available of the DAT show's contents in case you're wondering what show you're listening to. You can simply go into your media player, and I don't know if it works the same way in other players or not, but if you go to your media player, the playlist comes up on the right-hand side, shows you what's playing. If you highlight the TRN or the whatever it is called that particular day, and I believe it starts with TRN, you right-click on that thing, and it will show up a dialog box or a menu choice, and you'll then pick properties. And after you pick properties, up will pop up a tab that says summary. And if you click on the summary tab, you will find there a listing of what is contained in that day's show, more or less in chronological order, although not exactly in chronological order. But nevertheless, you'll be able to have a preview of what went on that day and what parts you might want to listen to, or if, in fact, you have the right show and what you were looking for. All the shows will eventually be archived and up, and there is a place that we'll be using to archive the shows on a permanent basis so that you'll be able to go back after all these weeks and pick up something from earlier shows if you so desire. Well, anyway, just a couple points of business, and now we want to move on to some other things happening in the public policy realm that affect the Christian worldview. We have an article from the American Medical News of February 28th that came out. It says, Illinois judge allows suit over destroyed embryo. Court rules that the state law declares life to begin at conception, so the case could go forward under the state's Wrongful Death Act. Andis Robesniks, I think I'm pronouncing that right, from the AM News staff says, observers are waiting to see whether a local court in Illinois will merely settle a dispute between a couple and a fertility clinic, or if it will have far-reaching impact on an assisted reproduction, embryonic stem cell research, and even abortion. Cook County Circuit Judge Jeffrey Lawrence Jr. ruled February 4th that a pre-implanted embryo was, in fact, a human being. Duh, it's not a monkey or a fish, folks. So wrongful death suit filed against a Chicago fertility clinic could go forward. Allison Miller and Todd Parrish allege that at least one of their embryos created by the Center for Human Reproduction was wrongfully destroyed. That's a good way to say murdered, I suppose. On January 13th, 2000. These euphemisms fly hard and fast from the left, don't they? Judge Lawrence cited the Illinois Wrongful Death Act of 1980, which specifically exempts physicians from performing abortions, as the basis for his ruling. Philosophers and theologians may debate, but there is no doubt in the mind of the Illinois legislature when life begins, the judge wrote. It begins at conception. This court has no hesitation in ruling that a pre-embryo is a human being. Center for Human Reproduction attorney James Copriva did not comment before saying that he disagrees with the judge's ruling and that his clients are weighing their options before deciding what to do next. So it's an interesting case we want to follow up on and see exactly where this Illinois case ends. Glad to hear this judge actually sticking up for life. Hard to find that people that are willing to do that nowadays. We do find little fits and skirmishes of liberty going on, as we read from Nelson Waller, those different events in Alabama and elsewhere. We find people standing up for the truth here and there. Unfortunately, it's not widespread. The news media and most of the airwaves are filled with neoconservatives, that is, liberals wearing conservative clothing, all the time, so that people don't really know the truth about things anymore. They don't even recognize a statement from the Founding Fathers when they hear it. Most people have been dumbed down by the public school system and continue to be numbed by the ongoing media and Hollywoodites that they have forgotten what a great thing America was and what America was all about, the founding of this nation, and what Americans stand for in principle. People are foolish when people are looked upon as being foolish who would fight at the Alamo or would stand there on Lexington Green or who would stand up against the invading armies of the North under Abraham Lincoln and his cronies. They think that they are still living in the land of the free as true Americans without really being able to grasp what their liberty costs and what it means to be a free people in comparison to so many millions around the world who are still in abject slavery on account of their tyrannical states. So interesting discussion this morning from all of these different articles and sources we have. We want to continue to think about these things as Christians. We, as Christians especially, have a lot to lose by going back under tyranny. We've been in a state of freedom here, relative freedom and prosperity, for over a couple hundred years in the United States of America. But it'd be very easy for us to go back to the condition of the vast majority of people in the history of the world under the tyranny of a state, where a state regularly persecutes the church, and we're already seeing some signs of that coming up, and has been through the hate crime legislation and so forth. Beware, folks. The Tyranny Response Unit and the Tyranny Response Network, Christian Worldview, are here to help undermine this push of the left to undermine our liberties and take away the things which we cherish from our founding fathers and from our Christian faith. And you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we'd like to remind you about the Libertarian Party meetup that's coming up on Thursday night. Chairman Lee Ott wants to remind us, fellow Libertarian, and others, I suppose, you are invited to attend the monthly business meeting of the Greenville County Libertarian Party and the Upstate Libertarian Society this Thursday, March 10th, 2005, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road in Greenville, South Carolina. We hope to see you there, and we're always happy to put those public service announcements out for groups such as the Libertarian Party, Constitution Party, any of you gun nuts, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and so forth. Simply send them to Christian Worldview via questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net, and be happy to read about them on the air and announce them on the air for you. In another magazine called Physician's Practice of March 2005, there's an article on page I don't have the page number here, but there's an article, here it is, page 12, called Ashcroft's War. Should physicians be permitted to assist a terminally ill and mentally competent patient in committing suicide? This highly contentious issue has been working its way through our courts and legislatures, about to come to a head. In 1997, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that there is no constitutional right to physician-assisted suicide, meaning laws could be passed banning the practice, but the court left open the possibility that states could pass laws permitting it. That same year, Oregon voters overwhelmingly approved the Death with Dignity Act. Oregon is the only state where a physician may prescribe a lethal dose of medicine for a patient to self-administer. Two doctors must first confirm both that the patient has less than 6 months to live and is mentally competent to make that request. Soon after the Oregon measure was approved, Senator John Ashcroft tried to block Oregon law, but was rebuffed by the then Attorney General Janet Reno. When Ashcroft got Reno's job in 2001 after losing his reelection bid, he decreed that assisting suicide is not a legitimate medical purpose for dispensing drugs. The Justice Department threatened to revoke medical licenses of physicians who assisted in suicide, but federal courts blocked Ashcroft, saying he had exceeded his authority because the regulation of medical licenses is a state matter. So that battle is going on as well. Isn't it interesting that we have so many things like this going on in America today that affect the Christian worldview? And after all, what do we think about physician-assisted suicide or any suicide attempts in general, or abortion? Isn't it clear to us that men are created in the image of God? I mean, we aren't just another animal species that can be treated and manipulated as we would a herd of cattle. So if that's the case from the Christian worldview, what in the world do we think about these things? Well, obviously, it should be obvious, we must oppose abortion. We must oppose physician-assisted suicide or any other kinds of ploys to commit suicide or even murder, call it what it is. Instead, we need to promote the idea that God gives all life, that men are created in the image of God, and we need to do what we can to support life, not to destroy it. Now, that's not saying that necessarily you can't put to death someone in warfare or in an act of self-defense or even through criminal justice system at times, if we could make the justifiable case that the state wouldn't kill innocent people or the government wouldn't accidentally kill innocent people, of putting to death criminals. So there are occasions where life can be taken, but it should not be at the mere whim or fancy or for a matter of convenience of any particular person. And so the deep question number 11, which may be found at the homepage, policyofliberty.net, scroll down to where it says at the very bottom or close to the very bottom, deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. Question number 11 will pop up and says, is it important for American Christians to be formed and vote or get involved with politics or to sit on a jury? The answer to all these things is yes, by the way. Organize First Amendment protests. How does Proverbs 24:11-12 relate to abortion clinic protesting and Operation Rescue? Proverbs 24:11-12 says, deliver those who are drawn toward death and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the hearts consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his needs? Well, as a Christian, you could take that verse, as it says, to be your call to go and oppose those who are in favor of abortion, those who are in favor of euthanasia. And you can oppose these people by protesting, using the political process, sitting on juries, or even by so-called illegal actions. Why shouldn't we break the law in order to do good? Big question. Well, that's an interesting point. We're glad we're able to bring these things up here and talk about them. But instead of going further with that, we do have a caller on the line. We want to go ahead and take that phone call. And we'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Chuck.
Hey.
Hey, John.
Hey, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Enjoying the show this morning. You raised a point a while ago that I wanted to ask about how the control of the money supply and the Fed, and I think they're pushing us all the time toward more and more of a cashless society. And I think cash is one of the great bulwarks of liberty, where we have privacy and anonymity. And I was wondering if you would care to comment on that, and also on the Liberty Dollar. I hear you better on the radio, so I won't hang up and listen to your reply on the radio.
Sure, no problem, Chuck. Be glad to do that. Thanks so much for calling this morning. Always appreciate faithful listeners calling into the Christian Worldview Show to discuss these things.
All right.
Now, he wants to talk about the Liberty Dollar, and I don't have a lot of information on that, but I will say that Chuck is precisely right when he says that cash is one of the great things we have to help promote and retain liberty in the land. To go to a cashless society may have wonderful implications for efficiency. I don't have any doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that going to a more modern, non-cash society would be very efficient for some things, for some purposes. But it will be very inefficient for the cause of liberty and the ability to avoid extortive taxes. Now, again, some divine writers out there are going to be saying, well, we don't want to avoid any taxes. If the government decrees a law that we have to pay a tax, we have to pay it. And if I can use a card instead or a chip implanted in my forehead or wherever it is, then it's worthwhile doing. I'd rather do that than go ahead and actually have to fill out forms. I'd rather have done it all automatically. Well, folks, this is a cop-out, and it's not a good idea. We've come up against a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to discuss this issue and answer Chuck's question in more detail. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into the last half hour of Christian Worldview, the second day of the 10th week of production on the Tyranny Response Network. Still upgrading our facilities, and we hope as you continue to listen in the next couple of weeks, we will have even greater range in the upstate, and we're looking forward to the upgrades that are coming away technologically. Stay tuned to the program and hang in there with our poor transmission if you're listening on the FM wire, because we have people constantly saying, oh, Dr. Coben, I'd really like to be able to hear you. I'm down in Union or something like that. We're 20 miles away from Greenville. We're just not able to pick up the station well. We're sorry about that. We're doing our best. Remember, we're a volunteer effort here. If you'd like to help support TRN and sort of fund us and propel us better with either your volunteer efforts or your capital, go ahead and go to policyofliberty.net and read how you can actually end up supporting TRN in a very positive way. Scroll down, policyofliberty.net, and you'll see those links there and how you can do that. In Greenville today, we currently have about 48 degrees. We're rising to a high of 52 degrees. Here in Greenville, it's going to be showers and rain all day, a pretty dreary day, so make sure you carry your coat if you're still heading out to work this morning, because you'll be needing it today. Well, Chuck had called in right before the break and wanted to talk about a cashless society and the Liberty Dollar. And his comment was simply, don't we have more liberty under a cashless society than we would otherwise? Isn't it a check on government when they are able to not control every aspect of our lives through the controlling of our currency? We might even be able to evade or avoid their extortive policies and taxation. Well, I think Chuck is perfectly correct when he makes this analogy. Having cash and being able to trade with cash is an ultimate check against the federal government, not only against inflation, but against their control. And as long as we can move to a system of barter at any time, although that's a degradation of our economic well-being to actually have to go to a barter system, it still poses an ultimate check on the state's power over us and control over us. So going to a cashless society might have some virtues of efficiency, but isn't necessarily a great thing for us to engage in and be put under in America. Having the Liberty Dollar, which he mentioned, is also a good thing. The Liberty Dollar are these coins that are pure 1 ounce pure piece of silver. It has a walking liberty on it and says $1 on, or I believe it says $10 on it, that you can use as cash, as currency, as an alternative currency to Federal Reserve notes. And even here in Greenville, there are many places that are very happy to accept the silver Liberty $10 coin rather than a $10 Federal Reserve note. And so long as people are able to trade and use this as money, it does indeed enhance liberty. We shouldn't try to encourage, I think, as Christians, anything that can be done to bring down state power and to encourage the liberty and freedoms that we had in the founding of this nation. And if we're using the Liberty $10 coin is one way we can do that, then by all means we should. So, Chuck, we really do appreciate the call this morning, and all I can say is I'm all in favor of maintaining cash, especially cash that would be put into gold or silver form as a means of maintaining liberty in the land. It's an excellent idea and something we, I think, should be very much in support of. There is an article that came in my research staff had about Western banks rigging the gold market. It's somewhat related to this. I'm going to read a little bit of this morning. This came off of businesswire.com from Dallas. A study published by a research foundation in Dubai has endorsed the Gold Antitrust Action Committee's findings that Western, Central, and commercial banks have rigged the gold market, but have much less gold than they claim to have, so are vulnerable to rising demand for gold. The study recommends that oil-producing countries in the Middle East diversify their ever-depreciating U.S. dollar holdings into gold. The study concludes the paper dollar is a dollar standard is a dead man walking. Its debt accumulated over the recent decades. It's too high to be effectively repaid. It will either default or be inflated so to the extent that it will not hurt to pay it back. Therefore, the accrued imbalances in global finance and the inherent weakness of the worldwide growth models rely on a continuance of U.S. deficit spending are likely to usher in a serious crisis of currency systems in the coming years. Gold will be a suitable means of asset protection and ultimate payment in such a scenario. It will preserve the wealth of individuals, and central banks alike will ensure important maneuverability for the latter. And the article is basically pointing out how much power the central banks of the world and other countries have over the economy by using their inflated fiat money. They can inflate any time they want to get rid of debt. The problem with the thesis is that they're going to actually use hyperinflation, is that if they do that, the parasite will end up damaging itself very much. And a smart parasite, like the U.S. federal government has been in over its history, is better just to take bits and pieces of tax money from people, extort them in various different ways, whether it's by inflation, property takings, or direct income taxes, or sales taxes, gas taxes, permit fees, and so forth, tariffs. If they take just little bits and pieces, they can get an optimal mix of looting or plundering off of the host while they, the parasites, still are able to live. So I really doubt they're going to go for the collapse that some conspiracy theorists are predicting, that they're really going to go for and be stupid enough to kill themselves by going for a huge financial catastrophe. They'd have it so good right now by playing the game that they're currently playing. Nevertheless, gold, if I may be wrong about this, obviously, and therefore it is always advisable for folks to hang on to a few $1,000s worth of gold. Have some gold in your possession as an insurance policy. I'm not looking at it as an investment. Some people think, well, the market might go up in gold and it might be $600 an ounce or $800. Well, that may well be. Just like you can speculate in any commodity, there is a chance that you can have a profit. But economically, there's no reason to believe that natural resources will become more expensive over the long term. In fact, all natural resources, whatever they are, oil, lumber, pork bellies, corn, whatever it is, become cheaper over time, not more expensive. It's a fallacy to believe that things that are natural resources will increase in value over the long haul. Sure, there'll be speculative blips ups or movements down, wildly, but that's not going to last. Over the long term, any natural resources are going to decline in value, including gold. Now, having said that, I still advocate that you should hold some gold just in case there is some instability in government, whether it's hyperinflation or otherwise, in case that actually occurs. I don't think that it will, but if it did, and has in the past, but I think that's because governments were stupider then. I think the parasites have learned how to manage things better. But if it does happen again, then if you have some gold, you'll be in very good shape. So I do encourage people to get gold, not as an investment, but as an insurance policy. Also, go along with what Chuck had said, it's a great idea to have some of these hard assets in case we want to trade between each other and don't have cash anymore. Because, again, it's our ultimate check on the state to be able to one of our ultimate checks, besides having our guns and shooting them, that is to have currency in our hands, gold and silver, that we can trade with without using the state's funny money. So, at any rate, interesting article. Appreciate people sending in these articles off the research staff on this Western Bank's rigged gold market study and how these people are playing a precarious game, tottering close to destruction because of the way they're handling their affairs with respect to the gold market. We're coming up against another break here on Christian Worldview, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we have an email that came in from Christian Exodus, the president or the head of, I guess he's the president of Christian Exodus, Corey Brunel in California. He says, the Ten Commandments in the U.S. Supreme Court. Dear Christian Exodus members and friends, something has really nagged me a while. While reading the Ten Commandments updates from the Liberty Council over the past few weeks, namely Mr. Staver's worship of the High Court, as he calls it. I've recognized a common thread in this email alerts that suggests he views the U.S. Supreme Court as almost a divine body that is the last and final word on everything. Perhaps I'm overemphasizing Mr. Staver's court worship, but I don't think so. For one thing, rarely is the court referred to as the U.S. Supreme Court. I hope Mr. Staver understands there are other Supreme Courts over which this High Court has no jurisdiction on virtually an infinite number of matters. They are called state Supreme Courts. Furthermore, with the right men in office, the state and local levels of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in these Ten Commandments cases would be irrelevant. The court would have absolutely no constitutional jurisdiction or religious expression on state property. Where we are all aware of the widespread farce called separation of church and state, and of the best informed among you also know the federal courts cannot rule on laws that do not exist, and since the First Amendment states Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion, it is abundantly clear that the U.S. Supreme Court has no business evaluating religious expression unless it involves Congress making a law. Therefore, when the U.S. Supreme Court makes rules on religious expression by state or municipality, it acts outside its legal authority and must be ignored and disobeyed, notwithstanding that other mythical doctrine incorporating, emanating from the never ratified 14th Amendment. Interesting that Corey is advocating rebellion. Isn't it interesting that he says that legal authority must be ignored and disobeyed? Sounds like he's a patriot, just like those who were fighting at the cause at the American Revolution, the war for independence from England. He is willing to disobey the state, as are we at the Tyranny Response Network. Most of us here, as far as I know, in fact, all of us fall into either the Christian Reconstruction point of view or the view that I espouse, the liberty of conscience point of view, and believe that it's okay under certain circumstances to disobey the state. In fact, a wide number of circumstances, whenever we can, get away with it, so to speak, and not to bring shame to God or the church or harm to our families in an imprudent and unwise manner. These things are available to Christians to partake in, not because we are rebellious in our hearts, but because we cherish liberty and the truths of God's word, and do not see that being brought under the dominion of a tyrant is a good thing. It's not for Christians to just be enslaved because some enslaver pops up and wants to take over our lives and liberties. Christians have a right of self-defense, and indeed, if that's the case, self-defense not only is against predators that might enter our home in the middle of the night with a gun, but also against the federal government or even a state government who would try to deny us our liberty or take away our property or our livelihood at the point of their gun or using their military or their justice system or whatever else it might be. So we stand firm with you, Corey, on this. Appreciate very much your insights into this theme, and we look forward to hearing from you more again as we encourage the people from Christian Exodus to settle here in South Carolina. We have one other article that came up I wanted to get to today that one of our main research staff volunteers sent to us on conservation efforts. This is an article, let's see, that came out of Earthlink News. Bush still can't shake his C average on conservation efforts by Sam Wardle. In 2001, President Bush gave the commencement address at his alma mater. He told the graduating class at Yale that he could do anything, be anything, they could do anything, be anything, change the world. And to UC students, you too can be President of the United States. Well, W, here's looking at you. Recently, the Property and Environment Research Center, PERC, which is a great institution, by the way, the nation's oldest and largest institute dedicated to original research, bringing market principles to resolve environmental problems. They're located in Bozeman, Montana, I believe, not too far from Yellowstone, released its end-of-term report card for the Bush administration. PERC's midterm report slapped Bush with a C-, and this year Bush didn't do much better. The Bush administration showed little improvement, snagging a C+. PERC helped to pioneer the free market environmentalist movement. In short, free market environmentalist movement espouses property rights, which encourage environmental stewardship, market incentives that spur conservation, and polluter liability. He goes on to say, my computer happens to freeze up. I was reading, writing an article, and my email computer froze up. Well, the point of the matter is the Bush administration has not done what it needs to do as far as supporting the free market premises for how we might, in fact, make the environment cleaner and better. Think about it, folks. Why? It's almost like the immigration issue and people crossing the border. People say the government has failed to stop illegal immigrants from coming over. Now, we're just given that for the moment that that's a problem. They say it's a problem that that government has caused, and yet they turn immediately to government asking for a big government solution, like building a fence armed or guarded by armed U.S. military personnel, another government function again in order to solve the problem. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, folks, to use the looter, to use the violator, to use the failure to complete a policy to actually improve it. It just doesn't make any sense to me that if you have a problem with the border, that you would trust the same person who caused the problem to fix it. It doesn't make sense. And yet that's what, unfortunately, I think the Constitution Party has gone over to in some of its ranks. They believe that the state, a big government program, should be used to stop this problem. We also see the same thing happening in the environment. People say, well, government, has failed to protect the environment from certain individuals, and therefore the government needs to be called on to solve the problem. Doesn't make any sense to me. If you want to have something that'll make sense, instead of turning to the state to solve problems, why not turn to the free market? The free market can provide solutions through changed incentives or changing the liability rules and so forth that allow the market to operate correctly, that will indeed produce great beneficial results in society. We're going to continue talking about these in just a minute. Maybe after the break, we'll see if we can get our computer back up and working here and finish reading this particular article. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And indeed, we're doing that today. The environmentalist movement is a darling of the left. It is built on a Marxian or Darwinian ideology. It's built on a godless philosophy of materialism, and something we must oppose, I think, vehemently as Christians. And the George W. Bush administration, according to the PERC, Political Economy Research Center, has decided that, look, these guys have just not got are doing a good job here. Drinking water and arsenic rose from a C+ to a D The higher grade, Perk explains, came from the administration's sensible handling of discovery of high levels of lead. This is the Bush administration's improvement in 6 of 15 graded areas. But the Safe Water Drinking Act incurred an enormous burden on small towns. The Bush administration will need to do something about this law if it wants to get into B territory in its next report card, they say. Chemical plant security improved from a B to a B+, which should give some kudos for them for that. The administration's global climate change grade saw some improvement as well, rising from 2 notches from a C to a B-. Perk says the Bush rightly rejected the Kyoto Agreement because the uncertain safe scientific knowledge. And while Bush defended himself by encouraging growth in developing nations, he still endorsed tariffs and agricultural subsidies that seriously harm poor countries. Now, this is a sham. I mean, especially after the tsunami hit, there were still tariffs and sanctions being imposed by Europe and America against those poor people over there. What a travesty of justice to have these kinds of exploitive government policies. Government policies attacking these people. At the same time, we're talking about sending them aid. Very, very much a shameful policy. Bush needs to bring more market forces into play. He's not doing that. He's still allowing a lot of government regulation to be involved here, which is only harmful. Governments do not solve environmental problems, folks. They just make problems permanent. May not be as bad as they could be, but we only get rid of problems ultimately under a free market system. As soon as a bureaucrat's in charge that has his power and pay derived from the existence of a problem, you can be sure that a problem is never going to go away. That problem is going to become a permanent fixture on the landscape. His report card, grazing on public lands, jumped from a C- to a C+. The improvement here is a result from small changes to grazing rules. Similarly, public lands management covering the activities of Interior Department of Forest Service also moved from a C- to a C+. But his bureaucratic congestion remains pervasive. The administration has furthermore improved its approach from water abdication, hopping up to a B- from a C. Pork barrel spending, the article goes on to say, although it's still the Bush administration's Achilles heel when it comes to water allocation. For example, it's proposed $7.8 billion over 30 years to restore the Everglades without addressing the subsidies to water use and sugar production that caused the problems in the first place. Where did the Bush administration fall down? On the battle for a national wildlife refuge in Atlanta. Big fat F air quality marks the worst grade received on this card, from a D to an F in different places. And scooting along here, trying to read some of these high points in this article. Persistent organic pollutants dropped from a D to a D- because of 2001 U.S. signed a UN treaty banning persistent organic pollutants, including DDT. But DDT is the most effective and cheapest form of malaria control available, so Bush blew it on that one. Regulatory review fared a little better than others, falling from B to a B-, not doing a good job there. And he's holding steady on several points, including agricultural chemicals, the Endangered Species Act, still stuck out of C, just has not been able to account for the full cost of Endangered Species Act, and it's proved a negative balance to the administration's improvements. Oceans, fisheries are still kept as an ugly D, just doing a bad job there, also doing a poor job with certain other aspects of water quality, Superfund, and brownfields. Overall, Bush is just not doing a good job as far as the free market understanding of how to handle environmental problems. Why don't people want to use the free market if they're in government to handle environmental problems? Well, for one thing, if they do so, if the market were allowed to simply be free to control air pollution, to control water problems, control grazing problems, energy problems, the use of certain chemicals, ozone, malaria-controlling substances such as DDT as a pesticide. If these things were allowed to be used in the market, government would lose its control. And by losing its control, government would also lose a lot of jobs. The state would no longer be able to be called upon to actually make changes at the whims and wishes of the left. And therefore, there is a great incentive both on the part of the leftists and on the part of government agents and actors who perform these jobs as bureaucrats for the environment to maintain the status quo as is. What incentive would you have if you were sitting on an air pollution board to clean up the air? Think about it. If you clean the air, what happens to your job? It goes away. So instead of cleaning up the air, you clean it up just enough to help make people think that you've done your job to reduce pollution to some extent.
but you never let it get out of control. That is, too clean. If the air becomes too clean, then all of a sudden people are going to say, why am I paying tax dollars for this guy to have a job? We need to have him go somewhere else and work elsewhere. Let's go ahead and fire him. Well, when it gets to that point, the bureaucrat, being as smart as he is, starts to realize, my livelihood depends on there being bad air. I better make sure the air is still a little bit bad. And so you have a persistent problem forever of smog that will never end. And that's precisely what we see happens, what we see happen in the marketplace, in the real world when government tries to so-called solve environmental problems. They just make things worse. Another quick example, and we could talk about many of these, but the African elephants were being hunted for their tusks years ago. And what in the world would stop them from completely eliminating the herd when government was protecting these animals? Well, there was nothing really to stop people who were starving and could get so much money from one tusk from trying to break the law and violating the poaching commandment of the government in Kenya or wherever it might have been and get these tusks. And by doing so, they were risking their life, but they were also saying, look, you know, I'm going to die at any rate from starvation and poverty. Why not take the risk? And they went ahead and did so. They went ahead and tried to make their lives better. But by doing so, they completely dilapidated the herd. There was nobody controlling it, nobody able to stop these poachers. What happened towards the end was government began to realize the easier way to do this, to actually preserve these, and maybe government didn't, people did, is to privatize the herd. Let them treat the African elephant as a rancher would his cattle. And so what indeed happened is you had folks come in and treat the elephants as they were cows, and they began to slaughter off the weaker and keep the stronger, increase the herd. So the herd size, instead of almost becoming extinct, started to grow. They started harvesting the tusks and began protecting their private property. Poachers came in, and their little mercenary army would come out and defend their own livestock, so to speak, and you had absolute growth in numbers of the African elephant. So we see the free market resolving a problem there. We've actually run up against the end of the show here, so we're going to have to cut it short for today. We really appreciate you listening to Christian Worldview today with Dr. John Coben, and we will see you tomorrow on the Tyranny Response Network.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.